Drunk on Comics, episode 153, aging one day at a time to Old Man Logan.
And Derek.
Dude, I seriously thought that having a week off would help my liver become less swollen.
Nope.
No, especially not after last night.
Yeah.
That's it? That's all you fucking got?
Kind of. I mean, I'm just happy to be back here recording our voices.
I'm happy to be here because I'm another year older and I'm not dead.
Well, yeah, you're old, dude. Everyone's another year older if they count back to last year at this time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't have to have a birthday to be another year older.
Well, I get to write a different number for the next 364 days.
365 days because there's a leap year next year.
Oh.
Burn! Your old age must be
affecting the brain cells.
Affecting your brain cells. that or the liquor.
That, well, at my age, I don't even know why we got the damn leap years, and we should get away with, get rid of the daylight savings time, because that's just the devil's work.
Back when Prohibition was going on.
That was a hard time for Drunk on Comics. It was just comics. And even those were mostly censored and told.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I mean, shoot, a lot of those comics, you know, we didn't get to keep because they needed the paper for the war.
That's true. Well, that was coming up. I mean, Prohibition and, well, yeah. It's coming up.
Yeah, so.
We're time travelers again, aren't we?
We are. So, all right, guys, welcome to Drunk on Comics. My name's Derek.
I'm Matt.
I'm Tony.
You guys are fucking slow today.
We are. It's
just been one of those weeks, man. I'm just gonna repeat myself. I'm so happy to be back in here. It's great. I caught up on all those comics that I did not. And
no, not caught up.
Okay,
I think I'm even more far behind now that we took a weekend off than I normally would be.
I thought for sure. I'm like, you know what? This is gonna be awesome. I'm gonna get caught up on books. No, personal life stuff happened, and I have a bigger stack than I've had, like, ever, because shit that we came home with from Motor City to, you know, stuff that we picked up in the last 2 weeks, oh my god, I'm so far behind. But anyway, should we get things kicked off here?
Yeah, we should start.
Well, we don't have to.
No, we should. We should do something productive.
All right. We're going to get it kicked off here with Off the Shelf. And it's weird. This is the first time we're not going to say it's brought to us by Motor City.
I know, but it is brought to you by aging. Happening all the time. I mean, Tony and I actually wanted to, you know, we're going to give you crap for another birthday and getting older. But we also wanted to give a shout out to our stepdad, who's also older.
Oh, that's right.
And my brother-in-law, who's also older. And all three of you share the same birthday. So cheers to all of you.
Yeah. And my dad, his birthday is 2 days after mine.
Okay.
And then I got another buddy. He's the day after that.
My birthday is like almost 6 months before, so hey.
We don't care about me. We don't care about that right now. It's my time, Tony. So, all right, cool. Who wants to kick it off?
You know what? I'm going to kick it off with something that has.
I just want to know how many more times you guys are going to say "kick it off" because I've been sitting here counting, and it is about 10 times.
We're going to kick it off more times than the FIFA scandal is going to be mentioned on the news.
Oh, and boot.
Oh, my foot ball. Yeah. No, speaking of something that only comes every 4 years, Sandman Overture number 5 has finally come out. written by Neil Gaiman, art by J.W. Williams III and Dave Stewart. Okay, so as we know, Sandman Overture, pretty awesome. I mean, it's the same. It's Gaiman. He's telling a story, but it's always confusing as all hell. And episodically, I'm realizing I would have hated buying the original Sandman series like month to month if it came out, because I'd be like, what the hell happened in this issue, and how does that connect to the issue I read before? Because it's been a month, or in this case, like 4 or 5 months since I read what happened last, and I'm confused because he's such a good storyteller. There's so much minute detail. They might say something in a fraction of a sentence that's super important. And so rereading this, I just wanted to go back through and find, you know, issues number 1 through 4 of this story arc just to catch up. But, you know, again, Neil Gaiman's writing a novel here. There is so much dialogue and story progression here that, you know, it's good. It was enjoyable.
I can see why when they're talking about, you know, it's his artist who he is kind of waiting on to get these out, which I can see the detail. I can see why it took time, why it takes 4 months in between, because this originally, what, started a year and a half ago, 2 years ago? Yep. And
I think it's about a year and a half now, because I think the first one came out in November of 14.
Yeah.
November of 13.
Like they're really milking this. Like, if this was a Marvel book, it would have been done within a month. I mean, every week, bam, 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 it would have been out. But I guess I am kind of glad that it is prolonging a bit so I can still, like, have this to look forward to when they wrap it up, because it is just so beautiful and just an amazing story and metaphysical, like, dream sequences and just scene and just...
They're not traditional panel layouts. Every time Dream's mother, Knight, is in it, we've get, like, this... I don't know, it looks like one of those, like, flowers you draw in the margin of your notebook when you're in high school and stuff, and it's just, like, a free-flowing pattern, and yet... In the petals of this weird flower of Night, you get the little scenes and episodes between Dream and his mother. I can't put into words the art. I mean, you got to pick this up, and if you're not picking this up, then you really can't call yourself a fan of the Sandman.
I guess if you're not buying it, you wouldn't be a fan of the Sandman. But
that's true. But I mean, I'm telling those people who are fans of the Sandman that aren't reading this and being like, what the deuce? Except if what you're waiting for is it to all come out in one big graphic novel so you can read the story from beginning to end and not be confused as all shit, then you're just smarter than I am. So.
Matt, who did you say is doing the art again? I know Dave Stewart's doing the colors.
J.H. Williams III.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So. Well, and Dave Stewart's colors are so damn good. I mean, he's one of the top in the industry, in my opinion. So... Mm-hmm. But, yeah, cool.
Good. The big important things about this one that are kind of neat and worth spoiling, I should, you know, say, because, again...
There are really no more dreams.
There's spoilers. The one person who knew all the spoilers found something that he didn't know. Destiny of the Endless has a little surprise waiting for him in his gardens. And it's really fun because they set up the fact that Destiny knows everything. And then he goes, what? Question mark. I laughed out loud because I thought the...
Well, like that, and then the part with the dream cat being the only other dream in existence besides the other dreams of, you know, how'd you get in those places? Well, have you ever tried to keep a cat out of anywhere?
Yeah.
Like, that simple...
The little quips.
Yeah, which there aren't too far in between because this is really one of those thinking books. You need to look outside the box and seriously... deep thoughts on some of these where they're at now.
I kind of forgot that he was thrown into a black hole at the end of the last issue.
Well, it took a while to remember.
I was like, oh yeah, that's what they did to him.
But I also like how he's trapped there, but then his brother was easily able to just pull him out. Which, is that why the other dream went to there to make him pull out Dream? Like, I don't see them wrapping up all this in the last issue.
I thought there were supposed to be 8 issues. There's only 6.
I think there's only 6, yeah.
Hmm. Well, either way, it'll be Derek will be another year older by the time the next one comes out, but we'll still be reading it and enjoying it. So
everybody will be another year older if they're just going by the days compared to last year.
Touché. All right, so anyways, Sandman number 5, finally back out on the shelves. Pick it up, and you'll enjoy it.
Cool. All right, Tony, do you want it, or do you want me to...
I can have you go.
All right, I got Fight Club number 1 from Dark Horse. I'm sorry, Fight Club 2 number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, written by...
Hey, Derek, I got to stop you right now. First rule of Fight Club, man.
What the fuck you doing?
Well, no, this is Fight Club 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, first rule of Fight Club 2 is...
You tell everyone.
So, This is written by Chuck Palahniuk, and Cameron Stewart did the art on this. Colors were by Dave Stewart as well on this book. And I got the David Mack cover on here, which is just fucking gorgeous. But so this is the sequel to the book slash movie Fight Club. And it's basically years, you know, past where the movie book ended, whichever way you want to look at it. Tyler Durden, you know, or the... And you guys are going to have to refresh me because I didn't go back and rewatch the movie and I have not read the book in years. So, Tyler was...
The figment of the imagination.
The figment of the imagination.
The alternate personality.
Yes. And then, what was Ed Norton's character's name?
Was it Sebastian? I don't think it was, no.
Okay, because in this, he's calling himself Sebastian. So that's where I'm like, I don't remember that being his name, but whatever. So in this, it's interesting because you're seeing him, he's trying to get away from this life that he'd had. He'd gone to jail at one point, and, you know, you're getting a guy that's, like, he's picking up flowers for his wife for his anniversary, and the guy at the flower shop is beat to fuck. He's got a black eye that's swelled up, a fat lip, a cut eye, you know, or a cut eyebrow, and he's, you know, handing the flowers to him, and he's like, no charge for you, sir. Everywhere he goes, your money's not good here. And even though he wants to get away from it, he started this revolution, if you will, and it's still following him around.
Mm-hmm.
He's been taking a lot of pills, which this is one of the things that I really wanted to mention is throughout the comic, Cameron Stewart has, like, pills and things that are literally, like, sitting on top.
They look 3D generated on top.
Yeah. They're sitting on top of the page almost. And then at certain points they'll have, like, flower petals that do the same thing. It's a very, very unique art style to the book, which really surprised me. But Cam Stewart is...
Oh, well, you know why you can't find out his name?
They never said it?
Yeah. They just call him the narrator.
Oh, okay.
I kept thinking, too, because he always talks about... that was the guy's papers that he found. He says, like, I am Ed Spleen. I am... So, you know, he was talking about, I am his anger or something. But that wasn't talking about himself. That was somebody else's papers. So, never mind.
Okay.
Continue on. The narrator.
Yeah. So, basically, it's following two... You know, it's following him and then his wife that was played by Helena Bonham Carter in the movie. And you're seeing both of these things. And it appears that Tyler has been suppressed through a lot of drugs and whatnot. Well, his wife is not too happy about this. She wants the excitement of what it was. So she's been slowly replacing some of his medication with aspirin. And you start to see that Tyler is actually coming out in the book. There's a lot going on here, and I don't want to spoil much because there's some really cool things that picked up where even though it's been a number of years since I've watched or read the book or movie, there's just a lot of fun stuff in here that brought me right back to that moment when I first saw the movie and then when I first read the book, because I did see the movie before I read the book. The book was much more intense, and holy crap, is Palahniuk an amazing writer. But the dialogue in here is great. The characters are insanely lifelike. And one other thing I want to give Dark Horse a huge shout-out for is the actual physical quality of the book. Don't you notice how thick the actual cover stock and paper stock is?
Yep.
It's unlike anything else that you're seeing out there from most publishers because it's got to be a lot more expensive to use that kind of stock. But the payoff is a really amazing book where everything has come together on it. And you kind of feel like you're inside his, you know, psychotic head at times. And yes, Tyler does come out. And what he's up to is pretty fucking interesting.
Making more soap.
Actually, they do talk about soap sales, you know, in here, and but there's other business.
So you feel though this comes straight from the movie, then?
What do you mean?
Like adventuring off from the Fight Club 1?
Yeah, it's it, this is the sequel.
It's a legitimate sequel, but like, same, it just, same writer, right?
Me yeah. just yeah. quickly flipping through it, it just kind of seems like, how? Like, didn't he shoot himself?
No, he did. He shot himself in the movie. He shoots himself, but it doesn't kill him. It just goes out the side of his mouth.
Okay,
but, yeah.
But again, I, not having read the book, I don't know if that's how the book ends, too. But yeah, in the movie, he doesn't actually kill himself. He just shoots himself.
Oh, that's right, because yeah, he does watch the Indian burn. I don't know. Are you a space monkey material?
That was actually really interesting, because there's a... In the beginning of a questionnaire, and basically it's always answer D that always ends with sir. You know? Like, do you get out of the shower to pee? A, yes. B, why, sir? You know, things like that. So, yeah, it's a fantastic book. So, I mean, anybody, I think that even if you, it's been years since you've seen or read it, pick it up. I think it would be a little difficult to really understand what's going on with these characters if you hadn't, if you weren't familiar with the original material. This would be very difficult, but then again, it's a sequel for a reason. So, but it's kind of cool to see that these characters live on in a new form, and I really like that it's coming out from Dark Horse. So, be cool to see where it goes. So, that's what I got.
All right, I am picking up Old Man Logan number one.
I almost got that,
which is not really Old Man Logan number one because that was a whole different story in Wolverine. I think 5 years ago, which was a fucking amazing one of the better of Wolverine.
What if like
future yeah homage to him?
Just because Wolverine, I think the character is an old man. Like he's very old, but he's always been.
Start calling him Derek.
Derek Logan.
But I love Emma Frost says something about him being looking more distinguished because he ages slowly.
Yeah.
And I just think that old, the sideburns and the short cropped hair, yeah, he just always takes me as the grumpy old man. And
you don't need to have read the other series to, but this pretty much picks up straight from that, which is out of all these Secret Wars type things.
I can sum up the old series for you. Okay. Old Man Logan is what a Wolverine movie would be if John Wayne played Logan. It's a Western style feel, even though he does go to some big cities and stuff like that. But it definitely feels
yeah,
like
but what
the
happened
Wild
was
West.
There's really no heroes anymore, and so there was, I mean, this was where you got to see Red Skull wearing Cap's mask and
the feeling of it is very much an old Western. You got one guy fighting the law or fighting the corruption of the town.
Yep, and the inbred Hulk gang, which from that he took their baby from there, which is still within this. So you don't need to know that other series, but it's out of all these Secret Wars that are kind of going on, Infinity Gauntlet. I'm not sure. Inferno. I know that you picked it up. Does that have anything to do with the old Inferno that you read?
Oh yeah,
it does.
Yeah,
because the Infinity Gauntlet. Well, obviously it's around the Infinity Gauntlet, but there's some things where it's like old pieces of it, but it's a bit different from what's going on. So this is, as I said before, almost a continuation, and to see Wolverine still kicking ass because it almost fits perfectly within Battle World. This universe that Old Man Logan happened in, now being part of the Bad World, their domain of Old Man Logan Town, which I really wish in all these books they would show on the map what territory they are in, because some of these books aren't going to be just, you know, one territory that you think all the X-Men are at. Like, I know the Greenland is a lot of Planet Hulk is going to revolve around that, but as you read in Attila and Rising, they go to the Greenland. Yeah, whatever. that word. That you see that they also go to the Planet Hulk territory because there are these factions that are fighting each other. So to know where Old Man Logan's world is, I need to then go get my separate secret battle world map type thing.
You actually have to work at it?
Yeah, I wish it was just right in the front of the page. But I do know that it's somewhere near the shield because the key story element to this is seeing an Ultron head on their side, where there was an Ultron within Old Man Logan, him knowing that because all these people don't know that they're in a whole new battle world. Some of them don't. Some of them do.
Most of them seem to do. They seem to know the walls,
but they think that that's been their past the whole time. Yeah. So that's been their realm and their world.
Yeah.
So when they're bringing up other things, such as, you know, this happened before, I killed the Hulk gang when it happened in a different universe, and I'm just saying it happened here.
Yeah, their lives of their old universes have just blended in with the new information that, oh, you lived in this walled region, and Victor Von Doom is the god master of it all.
Yeah, and
I was looking for stuff on the old series, and just found out that one of the villains in the original series is Spider Bitch, according to the Marvel Wikia.
I don't really remember that, but
yeah.
I will say that following this Ultron head for me in particular, because I know I've picked up a lot of books on Battleworld, knowing that the shield built by, you know, Master Doom, God Doom, was created to keep out the zombie horde, the Annihilation Wave, and the Ultrons. So everything south of, like, this battle world are those giant three things that could, if potentially breaking through the shield, would take over the rest of this place. Ultron replicating himself, you know, the horde doing this, and then the zombies outbreak. So it's kind of cool that those are separate entities, that the Thors, as seen in Battle World 2, guard the wall to make sure nothing gets over. So to see that there is a head thrown in Old Man Logan's world is kind of like it's pulling on a whole bigger picture of Battleworld that I hope I see, because to kind of give it away, that's where he's off to. He's off to find out why the hell this Ultron head came here.
He's going to climb the walls.
Question for you, because I may have missed it. Did you mention who did the...
Oh, no, I was going to get to that.
Because I'm curious if it was either Mark Millar or Steve McNiven who did the first series, if either of those guys were working on this one.
Brian Michael Bendis.
Bendis wrote this, and Andrea Sorrentino did the art.
Okay, I was just curious more than anything else.
So besides all that stuff that's going for it, and the art is really gritty. Like I feel it's an old. It feels old westerny. It feels like, you know, John Wayne decided to put his two thumbs up for this book and go ahead and do it. But the best is the two to four pages with Emma Frost.
Oh, yeah.
When he gets to go and chat with her, because as this world was made up of also different factions of running towns, and he just killed the Daredevil gang, and her talking about when the Punishers came to town, she's sitting there looking like Phoenix when he first comes in. And he pretty much flat out tells her, I'm not Scott. Stop, you know, fucking with my...
I don't like it when you do that.
Yeah. I don't like, you know, seeing other things. So then she turns back into the White Queen. And then he's like, that's not what you look like. But she's still looking all hot. And that's when she brings up the distinguished. You look good for your age, aging, because, well, you have a healing factor. Yeah. I don't look as good as you anymore. And so I'm like... I guess I never really thought of her psychic ability kind of being almost like a mystique. Because that's who originally I was thinking that it was. I'm like, oh, a shapeshifter. But her to...
No, she's just, yeah, fucking with people. Yeah, put the image in
mind. And it was just a great, you know, talking between two old friends until you get towards the end.
She talks about when the Punishers came to town, and you just get the sense that, oh, the Punishers just go around basically wiping out everyone. But then you get a first-person perspective of her driving in a car. And then you see the Punisher shooting people. Her car flips over. Now you see them from the side. And then you see other people getting shot in front of her. And then one of them coming into the car and, like, pointing a gun at her. But it's all, it's like, four or five down vertical panels, all first-person perspective, just telling the story of the violence of that day.
That's really cool.
Including the car accident. And, yeah, I thought that was really well done.
And it's at that point that you then get the sense of why she's hiding that illusion from Logan. She's sitting there talking to him. It's because that's what's left of her. And that in of itself, when she says, I thought you were the angel of death come to take me, was just really poetic. And for her not wanting him to see her as she really is.
That artwork, that artwork is stunning, but the colors on that are just fucking insane.
The emphasis on the color red for the blood, both on the sheets and on her clothes. And I just love that old man Logan just takes his hat off, puts it down, and walks away.
Mm-hmm. And then you see a scene with Devil Dinosaur, which I just thought that was kind of cool. Just throw one in there, why not?
Middle of the desert, Logan's not riding a horse, and there's a giant Devil Dinosaur eating something.
Tony, who did the colors on that one?
This was Marcello Maiolo. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's this... Picking up a ton of books this week.
You got talked into picking up this one.
No, well, I was picking up anyways. It was just talked to put on my pull list because I was like, this one definitely going to put on my pull list. This one, I assumed I was going to. I just wanted, this was one of the few ones that I haven't read Wolverine in a while of where they're going to take the story. And the guy just goes, it picks up after the other one. It's probably the best ones there. I go, you know what? Fuck it. Put it on my pull list. And I'm not sad that I did that because when... This is going to be the series that shows what Marvel can really do with characters when they're allowed to do it.
Well, if they can reinvent the characters and stuff. I wonder if when Wolverine comes back, because, you know, he's been dead, frozen in carbonite.
Yeah.
When Boba Fett flies in his...
Boba Fett could be in Battleworld.
Did you see the Boba Fett in Overture, Same in Overture?
No, I'll have to look through.
Yeah, there was a little Boba Fett looking.
I saw Chewbacca.
Chewbacca. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, Chewbacca looking character. Yeah, I totally saw that.
Chewbacca looking character.
Yeah.
It was Chewbacca. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, look at that page. Is that not Chewbacca?
Oh my God!
What's hilarious is that. Never mind. The details of that are beyond. Well, no, it does totally look like Chewbacca.
Yeah, it's really funny that that's now a Marvel property too. Yeah. DC-owned book.
Yeah, in a DC-owned book, so...
But, yeah, so...
So I wonder... But I just wonder, when Wolverine comes back, if they're going to embrace this old madness. And I think they will, because it's distinguishing. You don't have as many characters that are, you know, kind of that seasoned old, look, kid, I've been there, I've done that. They do that with Wolverine a lot in the comics, but I just think they'll emphasize it more.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some news, then, that's come out in the last...
All right, well, I think the one thing that's important when we remember, you know, about talking about news is that we don't just phone it in, that we, you know, that we actually try and do our best to...
Every time I try to phone it in, I try to use my Black Widow phone.
Yeah. The Black Widow iPhone 6. There's only going to be 25 copies of this phone made, which I don't know, regardless of, like... Yeah, okay, I shouldn't say regardless of price. If price was reasonable, which to me it's not.
It's kind of a sleek phone, but for $1,600, no.
Yeah, like, I mean...
But I thought that's what a normal Apple phone costs.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, I guess here's what I think. Like, if you're going to get a $1,600 Black Widow phone, you should have every Marvel app already pre-installed, and you should have... all of their comics library available to you as soon as it comes out.
I just don't get what else it is besides the look.
It's nothing else. That's it.
Like, I could fucking design this in my garage with my 3-year-old nephew and charge only $10. Like, yeah.
That's because it would look like it's worth $10 after
you and your nephew get it. Like, this looks
like... But you know what you don't have to sell it?
Licensing?
The licensing.
It actually only costs an extra $100. For everything, but the rest of it's Marvel licensing.
Doesn't matter. I'm not going to call it Black Widow phone. I'll just say it is the spider that is a Widowmaker phone.
The Widowmaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know what? I'll just call it the Praying Mantis phone because, you know, when it comes down to it in the insect world, the Praying Mantis does the same thing that the Black Widow does.
Although, here's the one thing that I want to bring up that I think is cool. Out of all the phones that they, and out of all the characters that they could have done, they did Black Widow, and I think that's pretty fucking sweet.
Is it because Scarlett Johansson did those selfies of herself?
Oh, wow.
I probably shouldn't bring that up, but...
It's the new selfie phone?
It's the new selfie phone.
Okay. All right, Tony, great news for you. Have you seen new pictures of of the thing.
Yes, and I'm glad that more people are getting outraged than not just me.
What? He looks great.
How so? He looks like a turd demon.
You're just angry.
He looks like he knows how to rock.
Well,
either that, he looks stoned all the time too. Yeah. Especially his eyes.
Well, oh yeah. So that's the new thing now. In one of the posters, which has basically just showing the thing's kind of face in there. His eyes are brown, and people are really pissed off.
That's why this
is
so fucking meta. Because I keep saying he looks like a shit monster coming from the brown eye. I mean, get it?
Yeah, and we do know that traditionally the thing's eyes were blue.
Now,
were in sharp contrast.
In the original like trailer or whatever that was released, where it was shown, his eyes were blue there, so it could just be
they didn't Photoshop it.
They didn't Photoshop it, or they Photoshopped it the wrong color, or who knows what. But now I don't know. Here's the real question: are you going to pay money to see this in the theater or not?
No, this is actually one of those that I'll rent. I'll watch it when it comes out. No, I have no need to go watch it.
Drive-in double feature. I actually paid to go see a different movie.
Actually, I would say I would do that. I'll do that.
I'll watch the Fantastic Four as the second
film. Or if I have any friends that give me free passes, I would go see it. But I'm not giving them money to keep rebooting and redoing what could be one of the best fucking franchises if they did it right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they'd have to do it right, which probably means that Fox has to quit trying to do it.
Yeah. I probably should have talked about this first since we just got done talking about Old Man Logan, but there's some news coming out about what's going to happen after Secret Wars with Marvel. The news, like, there's a lot of stuff, but really the only thing to me that really I found truly interesting that I guess maybe I hadn't heard about before, hadn't talked about before, is that when Secret Wars ends and the whole new line of comics begin, it's not going to be immediately after whatever the fallout of Secret Wars is. It's going to be, once again, jumping 8 months into the future.
Well, I think that also, that gives them what they really love doing in the storytelling is now.
Now.
And then...
It's Marvel now.
Now. And then eight months ago.
Eight is a lucky number, so it brings good fortune.
Mm-hmm.
And...
No, it's going to be one of their plot
devices.
Eight
is also a vertical infinity sign.
I think it just leaves them room to then fill in the blanks
also,
once they get there.
I would agree totally with Tony on that. I mean, to be completely honest, I think what it is as they build the story and they go, oh, shit, that happened in the past.
We could have done that in the months happening right after. Also, I just don't want to see a whole bunch of people waking up and be like, dude, that was a weird dream. Yeah, I know. Hey, Wolverine, you're alive again. Yeah, I know, bub.
Yeah, and then they play the theme song from Dallas.
Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't mind when Marvel did this jumping eight months into the future thing to get ready for Secret Wars. I was kind of a little bit relieved because in the comic universe, you don't ever really feel like time is progressing, or you feel like time should be progressing with us on the outside world, which is why when DC did the big stunt of the 52 comics for the year and a new one every week, and it would take into account the season changes, the holidays and things like that. That kind of made those comic characters feel like they were living in real time. But, you know, the Marvel Universe, it just feels timeless. Like, there isn't any progression. Characters don't get any older. But when you do this 8-month jump, it does kind of feel like, oh, okay, I get that. You know, you are now wiser, more mature, more, I don't know, something. But
now there is one thing that I'm personally not happy about, and I'm curious to hear what your guys' thoughts are on it, because there are people that are split on both sides of this issue. Inferno number one came out this week, and the original solicitation cover showed Madeline Pryor and Magic on the front.
So they're the exact same covers with one very big difference.
Two differences.
Wow, okay.
Two. Basically, she had her original outfit from the 80s, which is like the top third of a shirt.
Yeah. It's got a lot of underboob.
Yeah. And then when it came out, it's actually now got her covered up with it going down to, she now has two-thirds of a shirt.
It's, yeah.
But now what pisses...
No, it's basically like a full black leotard.
No, no, she's you can see the little cut there.
Okay.
Yeah. But see, what really pisses me off is then you just leave Magic in the background there with half her boobs still showing.
Well, no, that's yellow.
That's yellow. Oh, I thought that was going to be that shading from her fire.
Yeah. No, that's yellow. Okay. But it could be. I could see how you take it that way.
Yeah. But now here's the other thing. Okay. When they actually show her in the book, it once again looks like it was almost like recolored.
Oh, in the number one.
But yeah,
Battle World, she was totally underboobing it.
Yeah, in the original, like in the Battle World or Secret Wars number one, they showed her with her original costume from the 80s. So is it just because it's on the cover?
It was Battle World. It was number two, Secret Wars.
Yeah. But, you know, I think this is one of those situations where, you know, somebody brought it up. I think just to, you know. Here, I'm pretty sure it was actually my girlfriend that said this first, where she said, she goes, times the people that are complaining about this are the that aren't even going to bother reading the comic.
That's true.
Now, I read the comic. To me, you know, I think the Goblin Queen, I think that outfit is completely appropriate for her character.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
She's a seductress. She's evil. You know, she's using, you know...
She's using her assets as ways to get her way.
Or
like
in this
all
case,
women.
Her boob sets.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I agree. So this is what I wanted to say. Yes, there are way too many images of women being objectified in comics. Arguably, too, though, the male figure is objectified, too. Prince Namor is one of the best examples. Like, he is an equivalent of, like, that's the perfect bod in the supermodel cover that... You know, us with our beer bellies could aspire to be. There's a lot of objectification of the perfect image in comics. I get that. But some characters I think it's important for. And then there's other characters that we could probably scale it back.
I mean, because realistically, is the White Queen's costume, is that any different from the Goblin Queen?
She even points out the fact that she knows that Emma Frost knows that her costumes are outrageous, but she owns that and she says, this is who I want to be in the image that I want to project. And I think if you give it's a character choice rather than I just want to see some underboob, then I think that it's valuable and it should remain.
Here's where I'm struggling with this. If this was okay in 1980, whatever, when things were a hell of a lot more, you know, scrutinized, and than it is today, where I mean, you know, you're seeing butts on network television.
Yeah, but Disney now owns the franchise. Then again, Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants.
That's
pretty disgusting.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean. You guys feel free to, listeners at home, feel free to chime in on Twitter and Facebook and stuff with us and tell us what you think.
Or start a random conversation with somebody in the bar. That usually is a lot of fun.
I think I'll be having an underboob conversation tonight while we celebrate my birthday.
Well, I know that, I mean, this is like kind of one of those controversial issues. There's going to be people on both sides of the page. But what also is going to be on both sides of the page could be ads pretty soon.
Oh, God. Oh.
We'll see how well this works out for them.
Yeah.
DC is essentially going to put their ad space right on the comic page. Now, traditionally, they take out a full-page ad. You turn one page, oh, look, there's an advertisement, but I can go straight back to my content that I want to read. Now what it's going to be is, like, you'll have the top half of your page be pretty pictures of superheroes fighting each other, and then an ad for probably the merchandise from DC to buy.
This isn't brand new, though. They did this, like, you know, way back in the day, you know, especially like 60s, 70s. But even back then, people weren't a fan of it. And there's a reason that it went away. I understand when it comes to advertising why they're doing this. Mm-hmm. It will make that ad more effective because people are going to have to see it. They can't just flip the page and not even see it.
And arguably, too, you can now take these what have to be full-page ads, turn them into half-page ads, and then save on paper because your layout for your entire book could be smaller. So,
No. It'll still end up being the equivalent of... It's going to be two ads.
Yeah.
Because or what it may be is it may be one lower half double page spread of an ad going all the way across the bottom on a page. Because what they're doing is they're asking the artists to take their full page so that it can be cut in half and still tell the story that way. However, when they put them back into the trades later for the collected issues, it will just be one full page again.
Yeah.
So
I would start fucking around with them and doing like one of those Mad Max or Mad Magazine, like when you put the two things together, you can see the full image. So I would totally, if I was an artist there, have like the top of like a middle finger and then on the other page, the bottom half, so that when they put it on that full page in the collected issue, it is a flat out fucking
middle
finger.
You know what they should do though is like when they're showing images of Times Square, which DC, you know, they've got Metropolis, so you know they don't have Times Square. But actually use real advertising spaces. Like there's a billboard sign that they're fighting in front of, and it's an actual ad space. That I'd actually get behind and think like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, for an issue, I would say kudos.
Yeah,
that worked for me.
This issue was brought to you by Pepsi. How many times can we put Pepsi
in? It's the same thing like in the 80s with product placement. Like, I mean, I remember the Goonies. Every fucking can of Pepsi is face forward. You know, shit. It's like you walked into a retail shop. You know, so or Baby Ruth. You know, whatever it may be. Why not? Why don't they? Yeah, you're fucking on to something. They should just start saying, you know what? Fuck it. We aren't doing real ads, but we're gonna put your product in the comics.
Yep. Wolverine only drinks piss beer because that's all he can afford.
Yeah. All right, what else is out there, guys?
The Wicked and Divine looks like it might be coming to television.
Are they going to screw it up like they've been screwing up a lot of television shows?
I don't know. I mean, who knows? Because once it's, you know, in pre-production, you always have the highest hopes. However, this is one of those books that I could see working well as a TV episodic series, introducing some people, as long as it's going like following the main story, introducing, because like in the books, it pretty much introduced a new character, a new god, or new this and that, and then having it follow kind of the rock band
type. But I think most comic books can be adapted to television,
excuse me,
quite well, because they are written episodically. And so you've got the formula of I bring you in, I get some exposition, we advance the story, and then I leave you on a cliffhanger. And I think when the stories, the TV adaptations do that, it's going to be a good series, but instead they do crappy things with them.
Yeah.
There's a teaser that just came out for Ash versus the Evil Dead coming to Stars.
That looks awesome.
It's going to be a 10-episode first season. They're all going to be half hour.
Who's playing Ash?
Bruce Campbell.
Fantastic. Then I'll watch it.
Boom, Sam Raimi is coming in to direct the first episode,
okay,
as well as be attached to helping out and stuff. So
okay.
I just find that just having the main people that help create it and then having Bruce Campbell reprise his role, I think that because then you're trying to wait for a movie to get made, which is higher production, you know, this and that, a lot more costly. Yeah, fuck, put it on TV and episodes, and I think it'd be a little bit better that way.
I really feel like, especially since special effects are getting better, you can do things that used to be movie quality a decade ago, and now they can be good, you know, TV shows. So,
one more TV show that is at least being adapted right now is George Romero's Empire of the Dead, which I've not read. So, I don't know. This one to me seems like a pretty big gamble because. You know, there's already some show about zombies on TV, right?
They walk around. I think they shuffle.
Yeah.
The Shuffling Dead.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. So,
The Shuffleboard Dead.
Oh, that's what it is.
No,
yeah.
I'm sorry. That's just about Florida.
Oh. You mean Jesus's Waiting Room? But anyway, yeah, so that's coming out. We'll see what happens there. Did you guys see the news about the Gambit movie? Yeah? No?
I'm not surprised it's an origin story is what they're suggesting.
Yeah. I'm actually kind of glad it's an origin story because that means that they can maybe negate that other movie that will not be named that Gambit was in.
There wasn't any other movie that Gambit was in.
Yeah, I don't remember ever seeing them in anything.
Yeah, moving along.
I do wonder, though, I hope if they're going to do it as a Gambit origin story that Sinister is going to be a major player in it.
That'd be a major Gambit movie. Yeah.
Why would Sinister be a major player in the Gambit origin story?
Is he
in Gambit's backstory? He was a marauder for a while. I mean, I know he's part of the League of Assassins and stuff, but having
thieves.
The
I'm a thief.
Is a thief, but I think that Sinister was an important element, and it's a more interesting villain choice. And if you're gonna tie him into, you know, the Apocalypse movies and the,
let's be honest, I just want to fucking see Sinister.
Yeah, no doubt. As long, and I want Tim Curry to play Mr. Sinister, and then I'll be happy. So.
Ooh.
Yes, yeah, I know your mind is going, oh, yes. So
yeah, although I don't know that he has the physique to pull it off anymore.
That's okay, he's a shapeshifter, we'll CGI him.
Yeah. Matt, this news I saw that I thought you'd be extremely interested in, Kill Shakespeare, the Backstage Edition, is coming out in June. And it's going to be a hardbound book, it's $50, but it's got some pretty cool stuff in here. It's going to be a 400-page book for $50. That's not bad at all. Which has the first 12 issues of the series.
Okay.
It's going to have some sketches, some artwork, some never-before-seen designs. And this is the really cool thing. There's going to be annotations from Oxford University's Katie Musgrave.
Okay.
In it. So I just thought that was pretty neat. And what I like about it, it has one of those like little red ribbon bookmark things on it.
Oh, nice.
And I'm just like, you know, that's a nice touch.
So it'll be a classically bound book?
Yes.
That would be great for a classroom, I think.
Yeah.
Get it for a high school English classroom. Because now kids can actually go like, oh, Shakespeare's cool. He's a comic book character.
Yeah. Huge note. We mentioned at the beginning of the show, and I guess we should do it again because we can't thank them enough, but Motor City, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Motor City Comic Con was fantastic. Great interviews, great panel, great, you know, podcast, great food, beer, the whole nine yards. Congrats to them. They made it over the 50,000 mark for attendees this year.
So great attendance.
Yeah. And I do have to take, I don't know.
Credit?
Well, I was going to take credit. I was going to take fault with the person who wrote this article who said it was thanks to zombie fighters and superheroes when we all know the real reason, but we don't need to flaunt that.
Well, you know, it's really interesting when you look back at things that, you know, I think previous, like, you know, this was our third year there. And so 4 years ago, I think they were around the 20,000 mark.
Mm-hmm.
Our first year there, they cleared 30. Our second year there, they cleared 40. And now our third year there, they clear 50. Clearly, we're doing something right.
I think so.
Now that I do have to lift a glass to those guys. They put on one hell of a convention, and it was fucking fantastic. So thank you, and congrats.
Thank you.
Two more things for me quickly, and then if you guys had anything else, up to you. But Jaden Smith was cast. It's been quote-unquote confirmed that he has been cast as Static Shock, which we mentioned a long time ago that it was rumored.
That's good casting choice, I think.
Yeah, so I don't know when that's going to be coming out, but, you know, another DC comic character coming to life. So, and then the another movie-related comic book news is that the Crow remake is, it's rumored that the main villain of Top Dollar, who was originally portrayed by Michael Wincott in the original movie.
Who's such a good villain. Such a good villain voice. I wish he had done more.
Yeah. That it's rumored that there's going to be Top Dollar will be a female. Now, I have no problem with the villain being a female. Where I'm a little confused is I was under the understanding, if that's the right
under
way to
the
say,
impression.
Under the impression. I had the understanding of the impression that I get that they were going to stick much more closely to the source material. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why.
Well,
they're doing that.
This might make you happy. There's a note that I just saw. It looks the person who's attached to play this female villain is none other than the talented Olivia Munn. So
no, it's not.
Yeah, so that should just make you so happy.
It's true. Tony saw it on the internet.
Yeah,
and you reported it in our podcast.
No, the rumor about Olivia Munn is that she's going to play Eric Draven. Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be an all-female cast.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I can't wait to see it. You know, because I know James Ebar is much more, is very, God, I can't even think. This mead's killing me. He's very involved with this. So, I have a lot of faith in that. Whereas, I truly don't know how much involvement he had in any of the sequels or that that god-awful TV show.
We will not mention it anymore.
Yeah. So, that's pretty much everything I had, unless you guys, you know.
What about Falcor?
Falcor! Ooh. Yeah.
Just Falcor. Yeah.
Okay, so anybody that liked the Neverending Story.
Which is everyone.
Yeah, well, actually, I was going to say, anyone that did, you're cool. If you didn't,
rewatch it and it'll blow your mind.
Yeah, and if you rewatch
it. But seriously, get stoned or drunk first.
And yeah, because I was saying, now rewatching it doesn't hold up as
no,
well.
No, dude, I watched it stone sober. It's still good.
I rewatched it with a group of friends, and we, you know, and it turned into Mystery Science Theater 3000, where we were just making jokes the entire time.
Yeah.
And our buddy Mike was like, God, guys, I'm trying to watch this. But no, James and I wouldn't shut up.
What if the thing is now like the Rock Eater? That he kind of does look like that a little bit.
I don't go back to 3 episodes when I made that joke. And
oh, did you?
Yeah.
I drink a lot.
That's why I didn't repeat it again, because I was like, that's too simple. I already used that joke.
So well, and I ignore you.
Anyways,
sometimes.
The point of this Falcor plush is you can get one, and it can decorate like the back of your couch, or you can wear it around your shoulders.
Here's the thing. This thing looks amazing, and this lady who makes them on Etsy, she only does a couple orders a month. In fact, going to the Etsy page, I find out she can only do about 15 of them a month. So if you really want one, you need to go when she logs on and says, hey, I have them to order.
Yeah, it's Game Guardians, right?
She has posted that she can't believe the response for her Falcor is so overwhelming that she's had 1,500 people contacting her wanting to buy one. And she says the waiting list would be years. She goes, I can't answer all the messages, but it's clear that the world needs more luck. Dragons. So she says that what she can do is she's putting up the design for making these that you can get for $18, so that hopefully there's other people that want to make them and they can resell them. She goes, I could easily...
Or people that wanted to make them just for themselves.
Yeah, no. And she says, I could easily up the price, but that's just not something that she
wants.
What was
she selling them for?
See, that's what I originally went to go see, and it doesn't have it up, so I'm not sure what she was wanting them for.
All I know is that I love the fact that, I mean, this is a 4 foot long plush with a fucking wireframe body. So you can actually put it into, like, different poses. Like, holdable poses.
I really, that's what I wanted to see, because I was going to fucking order one on while we're recording.
Before you guys gave all those descriptions, like, 4 foot long and that you can bend it into poses, I was about to say, I've got a luck dragon in my pants.
And that's not 4 foot long.
It doesn't hold its pose very well either.
Well, at least not for long.
Stand attention like a soldier.
It's still lucky.
And just like Sandman, once every 4 years it comes. All right, guys, that's it on news for me. You guys got anything else?
That's it.
All right. Tony, you got Indie Turnpike this week.
Yes, Indie Turnpike this week is Dark Gods, number 6, actually, which is the ending of the first story arc. It was a 6-issue miniseries, but how this ended seems like it's definitely, after they say this first story arc's ending, that more shit's to come. The story written by Justin Jordan and artwork by German Iramaspi and Michael DePacas.
And who's the publisher on this?
This one is from Avatar Press.
Oh, okay.
The reason why I talk about this is it is the ending of the story arc where we talk about the Dark Gods coming out of this crevice of chaos. And this gives this issue gives more of how it came to be. This the main character who is now a god himself, who is trying to fight off and save the world from the Dark Gods, he's a god himself, and he talks about when he first, and this is where I wanted to bring it up, because me and Matt having these philosophical debates of story, and story gives magic to creatures. Reading Loki, Agent of Asgard, talks greatly about how story in any mythology, and it even goes back to God is Dead in those ones, where when you believe enough belief in something, that belief can give power to a being to become a god. And that this person was saying back in early time, he pretty much became God. But in taking that power, he wanted to make order and be a fair god, but in opening the portal power or whatever, also let chaos in this world, which is the dark gods, which is the serpent. And there's some great
art. Why is it that all the gods of chaos are tentacly sea monsters?
Serpent-y, yeah. And that's what, and it goes, and it's a great origin story of how a god becomes to be, but it also says how in each of the stories, you know, that you've read throughout the years, whether it's, you know, Zeus, Norse gods, all that, he's always fighting the serpent. The serpent will always come back, and he will always be there to fight it. Now, where we get to in this book is it's the real world now, where he's like, once I can finally destroy this thing, I have more believers, because his power waned once the church came.
Yep.
Once they don't name it, but the one church, which Christianity, pretty much took away his believers, who they thought he is, but he still had enough power. They kind of showed him doing a few miraculous things through the church, such as healing a blind man, such as getting the snakes out of Ireland. At least that's what I was taking the picture for. The art in and of itself is beautiful, especially how they depicted the panels in this.
Who did the art?
I said it already.
Did you? Sorry.
Yeah.
This meat is killing me today.
let me get back to the main...
Oh, wait. No. Maybe I'm just old and I have Alzheimer's already. I don't know.
It's probably true.
I apologize. That's my fault.
No, let me back up and get back to the title.
Because, yeah, you bought this one digitally, yeah. So it's a
little... The art was German Aramaspi and Michael DePascal.
Okay, and who wrote it again? Because I'm dumb.
Justin Jordan.
Now, you did say all that shit.
Yeah.
Now I remember, because like, I was thinking, actually, I think the problem was I got caught up on Justin Jordan. I was thinking about other stuff. That's why I didn't hear.
He was thinking of his Justin Bieber albums. You know, it's not weird for someone of his age to like Justin Bieber.
What's wrong with Justin Bieber?
Go on, Tony.
I will just say this. Within that context of then order, chaos, and always having been, and then also the story of belief, you have his two, what were friends, saying that they need to record this giant fight, and they get their cell phones out and live streaming it. And from that, as a reader, I'm kind of saying, yeah, why are you doing this too? And he's explaining to his cohort there, well, we got to make sure that the world sees this. They need to know the story. And through the story, we need to have them believe that we can win. Because as they already said, the main guy that turned into a god, he wants to then, once he kills a serpent, be full god. And if enough people just believe that he is a god, he will still have that power.
So he needs believers.
Very much so. And so they kind of almost trick him in the way of story.
Matt's still laughing at that one. It was terrible. And he's like, I don't want to acknowledge, but I can't help but laugh.
They right. Shut up and let me quick say, they pretty much... Okay, there.
I almost choked out my media.
almost came out his nose.
Oh.
they realize that they need to record this and then have the whole world believe enough that they can pretty much overpower, set their plan in motion to give him superpower. Like,
yeah.
Everyone in the world, believe in this man, he's going to, but then that he will be so overcharged that like a battery will explode. And he's pretty much telling them how, you know, you can't do this, you know, and they go, well, you just already explained it. In your oversight of wanting to become this new god, you kind of got selfish, and you're now the bad guy. We're the good guys here, and in story, we're going to win. And that in and of itself, I'm like, this is fucking like one of those mindfuck things that I love about books. So I was really disappointed thinking that this was going to be it, that they kind of saved the day, but then I was so happy that I see, you know, end of first arc, where this is definitely a book that I'm going to keep picking up because I want to see more of. And it also kind of shows more Dark Gods coming. So who else is going to be the good, you know, person of order? Who's going to be this god?
See, but why is it that order always has to be the good guy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, why can't it be chaos?
Little chaos, you know, is good for you.
Tony, one question, because Avatar, it seems like all the books I picked up from Avatar are quite...
godly?
No, they're...
gruesome.
They're graphic.
Yeah.
In multiple different ways, primarily the violence, but sometimes also the sex. Is this book like that?
Oh, yeah, there's exploding bodies. Shit. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Decapitated heads and all that, so...
Yeah, like, Avatar doesn't seem to shy away from... anything,
mm-hmm.
As long as it's appropriate for the story,
mm-hmm.
which I appreciate that. But okay, I was curious because if this is,
that's another reason why I like these type of books. It's away from the having to cover up the underboob type thing,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of bullshit. Where I don't know, they could fucking swear in the book and. Sweet, they swore.
Full boob.
Yeah.
Yeah. We aren't even covering up half. We're showing the whole. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Cool.
So that's my take for any turnpike, and I know that you had a booze in a book ready.
I got a booze in a book. And I was slightly influenced last night because the bar I went to had New Belgium Brewing was there at the bar, and they had a fucking Plinko board.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. At our favorite watering hole.
They were there with the plink. Damn it.
Yeah.
Kind of said that I didn't go last night.
And first play was free, and then if you went and bought one of their beers, which they had Fat Tire on tap, then you could get more Plinkos for every beer that you were buying.
Played like 40 times?
No. I was drunk and belligerent, and I'm like, it's my birthday! And so... they let me, like, do an extra one. And then, actually, I don't even think they let me do an extra one. They just gave me shit. I think so I would go away. It was probably more the case. But I got a cool keychain from them that looks like one of the little, like, glasses, like a little tulip glass,
mm-hmm.
From them. And then I got, like, one of the bartender
bottle openers.
Sweet. And I got a free beer from them. Because I think they really wanted me to go away.
What was the grand prize, or was it just
whatever? They had, like, T-shirt. They had chapstick.
Okay.
I don't understand. They had stickers. They had a free beer.
Well, chapstick, it's there to keep your mouth, like, from drying out, if you don't understand.
Well, but if you keep drinking beer, you're not going to get chapped lips.
That's true.
And then they had bottle openers. So yeah. So, anyway, I am pairing Fat Tire. Shut up, Matt. Pairing Fat Tire from New Belgium Brewing with They're Not Like Us, number 6. And now, Fat Tire is an amber ale, an American amber red ale. And it's a 5.2% ABV. It's available year-round, and it's available in most states now, if not all of them. I don't know if it has full 50 states there. But I'm pairing it with They're Not Like Us because while... there are a lot of ambers and reds out there. Fat Tire is not like any of the rest of them. And also, it's an incredibly complex beer, and They're Not Like Us is becoming an incredibly complex book. You can't just slam through either of these and have it actually be like have the same effect. You're not going to get it. You're not going to enjoy it. Both of them you want to take your time with, and yeah, overall, fucking great pairing. For these two, for me.
They're Not Like Us doesn't seem very inclusive.
No, it's not.
Okay.
No.
Just wondering. We here at Drunk on Comics are super inclusive. Oh. And we want to hear all your thoughts on, like, the Twitter pages and stuff.
Yeah, so look us up on at Drunk on Comics on Twitter and Facebook/Drunk on Comics or drunkoncomics.com. And, I do need to say...
First rule of Drunk on Comics, you have to talk the shit out of Drunk on Comics.
Yeah. Second rule of Drunk on Comics is don't let the drunk guy do booze in a book. And forget to mention, you guys need to go check out inkwhiskey.com. Because, they are the best when it comes to booze in a book. Because you can hide your booze in little Nintendo cartridge flasks. And,
yeah. There you go. Derek, really, you shouldn't drink like 16 flasks worth of mead before we record.
26 yeah. ounces. No, 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 because it's 4 ounces per flask. That's only like 6.5 flasks of mead. I can still do the math.
Well, then you need to drink more.
All right.
All right, do we have any last calls?
I've got like one or two left for this week, and I left my pile of books from last week home. So, yeah. Hellbreak from Oni Press, number 3. Still a really cool book. And then my only other one that I had was Sons of the Devil from Image Comics, from Brian Buccellato and Tony Infante. Yeah, check those out.
Yeah, Inhumans, Adelon Rising, number 1, and The Infinity Gauntlet, number 1. I wonder what that's about.
What's it about?
It's Secret War stuff.
You know. Oh, okay.
It may be a Gauntlet of Infinity.
It's got this number 8, but I think it's sideways.
I was going to say, I don't think that book can end.
As I had mentioned earlier, just Loki, Agent of Asgard, I'm going to be sad if this series truly does end, but it's on its last days, which it is talking about what the gods are going to be doing to fuck up with the other gods. Spider-Verse number 1, liking that they're bringing back some of the people, even though the event of Spider-Verse just happened, it was a pretty good Spider-Man event, and having some of these characters realizing that they're on Battleworld right now, that they had a past somehow, is kind of good for where they might be key players within this whole Secret Wars business. Sabrina number 3.
Whoa, what cover is that? I didn't see that cover.
This is the only cover. This is the cover that my shop gave me, so I don't know if that's... I don't really go out looking for covers always, so...
Well, no, but like there's always... I must have gotten the variant on this one, because I didn't even see that one when I went there. That all they had left was the variant.
I like that one. And my favorite, one of my favorites this week, Deadpool Secret Wars, where it takes Deadpool and it's as if he was in the original Secret Wars the whole time. And when you're reading this and you're opening the pages of them doing the stupid exposition back in the day of, I am so-and-so, I am so-and-so, and I am so-and-so. And he goes, and hey, I'm Deadpool. And that was great exposition you guys were doing there. It's good to know everyone, but hey... It's so dumb and quirky that, I mean, he's...
So it's a good Deadpool book.
It's a great Deadpool book.
Out of curiosity, you're going to have to rip open the cover on that one because I want to know who wrote that one. I didn't pick it up because I have... I can only do so much Deadpool.
And that's the thing, though. I do understand you have picked up some Deadpool, other Deadpool you've hated. This, in of itself, because it's going to be the limited series for this thing... is actually worth it for...
He only has limited series.
No, he has the main run that he had going on for him.
Well, he did, but...
Cullen Bunn wrote this. Okay,
that's what I was wondering. Because Cullen Bunn is so good with him.
There is, though, also the Rumble in the East St. Louis, where also from... It wasn't Secret Wars that this took place, but this was when Grandmaster was fighting...
Grandmaster Flash?
Oh, the Marvel's Contest of Champions, which was another big event that they did back in the day. Oh, what if Deadpool was in that? And he has this B-list. I like this page right in of itself of where they're talking about what they did and grabbing their champions, and it's like the versus.
It's a full-on Capcom.
Yeah.
like, yeah.
So he's talking about his characters. What about us? Like, Dupe and Howard the Duck and She-Man Thing.
She-Man
Thing. And the Vile Tapeworm.
What?
And this story in of itself concludes where they have to go find the bonus, mainly because Grandmaster was just pissed of, or wanting to have Deadpool.
Wait, is that Man-Thing? Or what is
She-Man Thing.
What the fuck is She-Man Thing?
You need to read this, because when it gets to the part of where he finds the prize, which says participation, all right. He's a participant. He won the award. That's what he found.
All right, Tony,
I can't talk about this enough. I'll let you read this after the show.
I'm borrowing this book. Here, give me your backing board. All right, so I don't want to fuck it up.
It's great, but that's all I had this week. And man, though, I still have a lot more in my pile that I haven't even read from the last 2 weeks. That
I still got to finish the historical graphic novel that I got from the con. And still catch up on Agents of Loki, so I've got a lot of reading to do.
Cool. All right, guys, take us home.
All right. we will...
Home is where the heart is.
Yes.
And our hearts are with comics and beers, and you, our fans and listeners. So thank you guys for listening, and come back next week. And
It's real easy. You just say, keep reading your comics.
Keep reading your comics. I was just trying to be sentimental. God.
We'll be back next week.
You're so old and bitter.
Get off my lawn! Talk to you more about him then. We'll see you guys.